Lake Effect continues on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Audrey Nowakowski.
And I'm Mitch Teich. How do you think about the objects around you? What do they do for you? What do they want? Are they art? These are some of the ways that local artist and author Nathaniel Stern wants us to think about our surroundings, our planet, and the art within it.
His new book argues that all things, all matter in fact, argues for itself. His book is called Ecological Aesthetics, and he joined Lake Effect's Madeline Andre to dissect what exactly that means.
The aesthetics in ecological aesthetics is a kind of style or orientation towards different modes of thinking, whether that's about personal, political, or ethical decisions that we make. We can think about these things aesthetically. It's what can be said, shown, experienced, or practiced, how it is said, shown, experienced, or practiced, why, and most importantly, the stakes therein. And so here, aesthetics lead to action. The ecological and ecological aesthetics follows a trajectory by a number of philosophers that look at the world as a kind of complex system of forces. If you don't mind, I'm going to read a little excerpt to kind of give a sense of what I mean by that. The fact of matter is that it all argues. Matter perceives, matter moves, it feels and it thinks. Matter perceives in that it takes account of its surroundings and shifts trajectories of becoming. A tree grows around that tiresome river or toward the light of its fancy. An electron jumps and swerves from atom to molecule and eventually finds its desired equilibrium. A cliff erodes against water and wind, perhaps eventually crashing into the sea. The sea then moves in and around a torrent of interfering waves and currents in its new and always ongoing composition. And matter changes as it moves as well. A molecule's proximity to another changes density. Jumping electrons change the molecule, and so on. Matter feels outward and perceives and moves, responds and reacts, then feels and perceives and moves and changes once again. Matter thinks and argues, perhaps not in the way a human consciousness thinks or argues, but any dash thing, and certainly this book, can be said to be part of, as intellectual historian Nicole Ridgway calls it, an event of thought. Is thought exclusively human? Only in as much as my own thoughts are exclusively my own, and they are most certainly not. Other thoughts and ideas and arguments preceded what I think, and these changed me, my thoughts, my ideas. These other thoughts were themselves not completely original, were birthed, transformed, and amplified by other things, both human and non-human. Artists and artworks, writers and writings, books and the internet and the various pages therein, the earth, the sky, that blue, this light, the fact that I lost my keys or they lost me the day I originally typed this very sentence. Side note, aforesaid keys do not agree that they belong to me or even that we belong together. They are often co-conspiring with pockets, each other, gravity, and a plethora of other collaborators of this, I am sure, so as to make me look bad to my colleagues and peers. Each of these bodies is a force on thought, a force of thought, a thought in the act. And so ecological aesthetics kind of takes as its premise that everything has an aesthetic approach that it perceives and responds and reacts, takes some agency in the making of the world. And then artists and artworks amplify certain aspects of the world we live in to bring our attention to them, to maybe ask us to behave differently or better with the world around us. And then this book takes an aesthetic approach too. It tells stories about artists and their artworks in order to get us to think with and think differently with the world around us. And so to me, an aesthetic choice is a political choice in that way.
Your last interview that you had with Bonnie here at Lake Effect, you were talking about your new rig for scanning. Can you give us an update on that at all?
Was it if I'm remembering correctly, at that point, I take desktop scanners. Just, let's catch up here.
Yeah.
I take desktop scanners, traditional things that you would, you know, scan in your license with in order to send off, although nowadays people use their phones more than scanners. When I started with this series, scanners were like new and cutting edge, and now they're kind of quaint. But I take these desktop scanners, I make custom battery packs, strap them to my body with a computing device, and I go out and traverse the landscape. So I might scan in straight long lines across tables, tie the scanner around my neck and swing over flowers, do pogo-like gestures over bricks, or just follow the wind over water lilies in a pond. And so what you see in each image are these kind of strips that are actually adjacent times and spaces because of the relation of how I move the scanner across the landscape while the scanner beam is moving across the surface of the glass. And you can see where this fits in with humans' nature and politics, moving, thinking, and feeling with. At that point, I was trying to build an underwater rig and take the scanner scuba diving off a reef in Key West. I did. Everything leaked. Everything broke. Nothing did what I wanted or expected. as must have happened, right? Mm-hmm. Of course. That said, I managed to salvage a series of 14 images that are just beautiful and really show and feel the kind of movements of breathing and gravity and waves and plant life. There's a video about it on my website now, and all the images are there. And I was really happy with the outcomes, although I was invited a number of times to do it again, and I just can't because it's all broken. Mm-hmm. And so it was a one-time thing. Now I'm still experimenting with this series because I learned so much the more I do it. And in fact, because of the underwater rig, even though I no longer have one that can withstand going underwater, I've managed to make it more portable and easy to use because of all that research. And so although autumn and the changing colors of the leaves only really lasts a week or two in Milwaukee, I went out a couple of years ago and managed to capture some beautiful foliage on the lakefront here in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. And I've turned that into a new series of modular prints. They're actually in metal. So it uses a process that turns the ink into a gas and goes into a porous aluminum. So the metal is extremely shiny. It's in the metal rather than on the metal. And so it feels almost like a computer screen, but then it's got these beautiful fall colors that are really earthy to combine that with. And that'll be an exhibition at the James Watrous Gallery in Madison that opens in November, and it'll be up through January. And I'll actually be giving a scanner hacking workshop in January. I'll put some information on my website or send it to you.
Yeah.
So I can teach people how to make battery packs, strap them to their scanners, and go out and make their own compressionist images.
Going back to that TED talk that you gave, has your idea of ecological aesthetics changed at all since then? Or has anything come out of your work to produce this book?
Yeah, thanks for asking that. So it's interesting. As an artist, so much influences me. Perhaps that's why I work in the ways I do. And so over the years, you know, I begin working on something, and this is the privilege of being an artist, and I think it's a great idea, and then it doesn't do what I want at all, but it does something else. And whether it tells me that it's doing something else or someone else tells me it's doing something else, as long as it's interesting and calls attention to how we relate to the world, I can try to amplify that further. And so it was through reading a number of philosophers that even brought me to call that TEDx talk Ecological Aesthetics. And that TED talk was about my own work, and I kind of talked about four different pieces and how they interrelated, and the notion of ecological aesthetics emerged from writing that TED talk. And it was only because of the popularity of that TED talk that I was convinced to write a book about it. And when I, as a writer, although I don't think of these two practices as distinct, my art making and my writing about art, I most often want to write about other artists and artworks. I never deny the fact that I'm an artist in my writing, and I'll maybe mention a work or two, but I'm really interested in the privilege that comes with getting to go out and talk to other artists and the amazing work they do. And, you know, I'm just so fascinated with different practices and approaches to the world, and I learned so much. I think once I set out on this journey, yes, one of the first chapters that I write about is an intervention at an art fair that's completely about the commercial art world and completely about politics and capitalism. And that is not what the everyday person thinks of when they think about general ecology, right? We usually relate it to bioorganisms or the environment. But it was precisely because of Guattari's tying everything to capitalism and the problems therein that I thought, let me explore this space a bit. And I found a group of New York artists that did a series of interventions at art fairs and tried to show the problematics where here are these artists trying to make things as a gift, trying to teach and learn within the world, and someone else is trying to profit off of it. And what do you do in that space? And so it went out from there. Some of the artists I write about make very what's considered everyday art, you know, prints with digital forms. And I talk about how electrons have agency there. But others, and that's Malcolm Levy's work, but others like Dung Anwar Jahangir, who's a Durban-based South African artist, his practice is walking. And I talk about how he orientates himself and asks others to think with the world around them just by going on these walks through dangerous neighborhoods. So yeah, it completely changed me and how I think. As an academic, I firmly believe in the peer review process. So when I sent the book out, it was sent out to one amazing earth art scholar named Amanda Butzkis, who I had never heard of before. And the kind of feedback that she gave me on the book really made me think about, well, what are the aesthetic choices that I made in this book? So I thought I was talking about this other work as ecological aesthetics. And she made me reconsider that this book itself has its own style and asks us to think differently, and that the thesis really is around storytelling and narratives and giving new life and meaning. And then finally, this inspired me. After talking to all of these artists and finishing the book, I had a new idea for a whole new body of work called The World After Us, which imagines what our cell phones and media devices might look like in a million years. And so I'm doing things like working with geoscientists at Cornell University and trying to turn phones into fertilizer or food as a different mode of recycling. I'm grinding phones up into powder, extending them with oil, turning them into ink, and then making prints. I'm melting down IMAX and the aluminum therein and turning them into hammers and saws. I'm turning them into planters. So if you can imagine an iMac turned sideways, gutted, and then wheatgrass glowing out. Of course, I call that applegrass.
That's really interesting that you bring up what might happen in a million years, because one of the things that I noticed reading about the artists in the book is the focus on time, or the concept of time, as an important part. I'm thinking specifically of the street trees, of Yevgenia
Kaganovich's
Grow focuses a lot on time, or the concept of it. Does that have an important role in ecological aesthetics? Is time an integral part of that?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for asking that and for noticing it. If nature and earth and environment are part of where we want to think with, then we have to start thinking in earth time. Our existence is so minute compared to the globe's. And in fact, when we look at our media devices and we think about what's in them, we have to think about the Earth's own movements and crusts and cores moving and changing in order to gift us with the copper, the palladium, the tin, right? It took time for the Earth to move and think and feel and create and give us the potentials to make those things. And conversely, in a million years, this phone will be and do something. And so to sympathize with, and remember, sympathize means together, feel, to sympathize with the world around us, we have to attempt to imagine. We can't possibly really understand rationally what that time feels like, but we can attempt to feel it. And I think this is what art and aesthetics can do. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Yevgenia Kaganovich, amazing, brilliant local artist. She's a colleague at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee and Peck School of the Arts. And the work you're talking about, she just was really annoyed with those plastic bags that you get at Pick and Save, the ones that say thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you on them. They are horrible for the environment and impossible to recycle. And in her words, really ugly. And so she decided, you know, I'm going to do something with them. And so she painstakingly twists them and wraps them and stretches them into yarn and then knits them into these beautiful plants and has local collaborators, workshops, turning these into something beautiful. Again, to reimagine over time what these things might be and do. And she can't keep up, but she's made communities of practice who think differently about waste. And I think that's an important part. If I can throw out there, I've got a book launch coming up. Rather than doing a kind of very traditional book launch, I'm going to be doing a brief reading from the book. And then I've actually invited three of the local artists to be with me there. So Yevgenia will be there. Wyatt Tinder, who currently works for Milwaukee but was a graduating senior, and I decided to write about a student work in the book. And then Lisa Moline, who's one of the progenitors of the Overpass Light Brigade. So three local artists will be on a panel with me talking about this.
That's going to be so cool.
I'm excited about
it. Yeah.
They're great. You know, as a teacher and a writer and an artist, to me, discussions are so important. And keeping up, thinking with, thinking through, attuning to each other, helping one another on our way. I welcome people to get in touch. I welcome people to tell their own stories about art and artists, and I'll help them along their way too.
Nathaniel Stern is a Milwaukee-based visual artist and associate professor of art and design at UW-Milwaukee. He hosts a release for his book, Ecological Aesthetics, tonight at Boswell Book Company. There is more information about the work and its author at wuwm.com.